I'm Marco Werman. This is The World. It's been a year and a half since a devastating earthquake rocked Haiti, and many Haitians are still living in rubble or in makeshift shelters. Clean water is hard to find, and cholera continues to spread. All this despite a massive influx of outside aid after the catastrophe. Many people may wonder why all that aid hasn't fixed all of Haiti's problems. It's a question that Dr. Paul Farmer has grappled with. He and his group, Partners in Health, have been active in Haiti for more than two decades. Farmer's new book is called Haiti, After the Earthquake. In it, he contrasts the attitude of Haitian authorities with that of officials in Rwanda, who also received massive foreign aid after the 1994 genocide there.
The Rwandans said, look, we're going to have to coordinate your activities with ours, speaking to the non-governmental organizations and humanitarian institutions. You're going to have to do that, or there are other places you could work. You know, to put it diplomatically, the airports over there, evidently, is what they said to some of these groups. I think that's the right way to proceed, you know, to say we need to coordinate these efforts. It's mandatory. It's not optional. And that's a hard lesson, I think, for those of us in the work in NGOs to learn.
Is there enough support for the public sector in Haiti to kind of pull off a renaissance there with any semblance of self-determination for the people?
I would say there's not yet enough support for the public sector to pull this off. But that doesn't mean we can't strive to reach those levels of support. You know, some of the numbers tell the whole story. In the immediate relief phase, there was a very substantial outpouring of assistance to Haiti, and that went mostly to NGOs, to military contractors who could do things that others couldn't around logistics, and less than 1% of it went to the public sector in Haiti. Now, there are reasons for that. There was a very weak public sector before the earthquake, and then the majority of federal infrastructure was destroyed in the quake. 28 of 29 federal buildings were damaged or destroyed. But, you know, it's going to be a self-fulfilling prophecy if we can't push ourselves to do better by the public sector. And that's true at least in public health and public education, I would assume in public works. You know, looking at a cholera outbreak, how are NGOs and missionaries, groups like the one that I work with, for example, how are they going to really replace a public water system? And the answer is we can't. We have to find a way to rebuild the public sector.
There were a lot of generous contributions to the NGOs following the earthquake in Haiti. Partners in Health, your organization that you co-founded, received nearly $90 million. How did that affect the way Partners in Health actually engages in Haiti? Was it tempting to kind of redefine yourselves with all this money?
It was, and this offers me a chance, by the way, to get to the crux of using that number, the outpouring of support.
Of $90 million.
Of $90 million. I'm told, actually, Secretary Clinton said that more than half of all American households donated to earthquake relief, which is a stunning, stunning figure. But if you compare the generous support that Partners in Health received after, you know, we've been working in Haiti for 25 years, the budget of the Ministry of Health is $45 million. Mm-hmm. So you see the distortions that come into play. I think the International Federation of the Red Cross, the societies that form the Red Cross, raised over $1 billion in earthquake donations, whereas the budget of the entire government of Haiti is $700 and something million. So again, these are profound distortions potentially. Mm-hmm. And what was Partners in Health is struggling to do is to not redefine itself, but continue this public-private partnership approach that we've embraced over the last decade. And again, by way of self-critique, that means that in the first 15 years of our work, we really didn't do a great job coordinating with the public sector. We did what a lot of NGOs did, which is to build our own infrastructure, medical, educational infrastructure. It's really been over the last 10 years that we've said, is this really the right way to go, or can we coordinate our efforts with rebuilding the health sector?
Now, Paul Farmer, in addition to your role as doctor and co-founder of Partners in Health, you're also a special envoy to Haiti with President Bill Clinton for the United Nations. I mean, it's interesting reading your descriptions of President Clinton's approach to getting the bounce back in Haiti. They seem to be pretty straightforward, almost simple: create jobs, build shelters, that kind of thing. But at the same time, you argue that to get it right in Haiti, you need to understand the context. You need to have an intimate knowledge of the place. Isn't that a contradiction?
It probably is a contradiction, because I have to agree with President Clinton. If you focus on job creation, even context unrelated, you're still going to do a good thing. Haiti needs decent jobs. So I think building back better is his way of saying it. And I would just add, as he has, that we're not just building Haiti back better. We're trying to build development aid back better.
Paul Farmer, there are so many stories in this book, Haiti After the Earthquake. I'm wondering if you have one story, though, that gives you confidence in Haiti's future that you can share with us.
Some of the people I met who were badly injured, maimed, really, in the quake. For example, one young woman lost both of her legs and another one of her legs. And they have both not only gone through rehab and fitting with prostheses, but they've become rehab workers themselves. And I introduced them, Carmen and Shelove, as reasons not to give up in this term of resilience. You know, it's a cliche. It annoys the Haitians probably, and many of the people who are writing in Haiti, you know, journalists, make fun of our claims that Haiti is resilient. Well, Haiti is resilient, and there are people like these two, Carmen and Shelove, who have really bounced back. And I do draw on that example for, you know, personal inspiration as well, you know, because it's a tough place to work. But if they can, you know, come back and join the workforce to help other people, I think it's a good, more than just a metaphor, it's a good story of recovery.
What does it take to move Haiti beyond just a resilient country to a normal country? I mean, so many people, you have this water cooler reaction here in the United States. Why can't Haiti just get it together?
Yeah. And I'm not unsympathetic with that question. I think there are a lot of people who are asking that in a sincere manner. But building Haitian institutions, I think, is the answer, the best answer I could give. And that means the outside world, as the Haitians would call it, are not really invited to go in and replace Haitian institutions, whether in healthcare or education or infrastructure or private sector development. Really, I think the Haitians are asking us to learn how to do this in a much more egalitarian way. That's what Rwanda demanded as well after the genocide, is you're going to come in here and work according to our terms, and we have fairly reasonable terms. I think that's what the Haitians want to respect for their dignity at the same time that we acknowledge they're facing serious problems.
Dr. Paul Farmer's new book is called Haiti After the Earthquake. Thanks very much for coming in.
Good to be back. Thank you.
By the way, I also asked Paul Farmer whether his job as UN Deputy Special Envoy for Haiti in any way compromises his work in humanitarian aid. You can check out our video of Dr. Farmer's reply at theworld.org.